Welcome to Hardwood Handicappers with Zach Cohen, right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Zachary Cohen, VSiN.com senior editor, with another episode of Hardwood Handicappers. Today is Monday, March 2nd. We are recording this at 10 a.m. Eastern, and we have a lot to talk about today. We're going to start with two picks that we have for this evening. It's a short slate in the NBA. We're not going to hit all the games, but we have two that we like, and there's something that I'm kind of monitoring in Rockets Wizards. But after that, we're going to talk a little bit about what we saw yesterday, because I do think it was an impactful day in the NBA overall. And then I want to talk a little bit about some teams and traits of those teams that have kind of stood out to me over the last like 6 weeks or so, because I do think this is a portion of the year where, you know, starting to break down sample sizes and see what teams are doing well can be very helpful when looking at futures. And I've been doing that all throughout the season. But I think that since January 15th, there are some telling numbers, and we'll get into that later. But I will start with Celtics Bucks at 7:30 p.m. Eastern for this evening. And the play that I have here is Ryan Rollins over 5.5 assists at +132. That is also out there at over 4.5 assists at like -159. So if you'd rather go lower number, way heavier juice, be my guest. But Rollins has had 7+ assists in 2 of the last 3 games. And over the last 12 games in general, he's been doing some very good work as a passer. He's averaging 5.7 assists per game, 11.7 potential assists per game, and 6.8 adjusted assists per game. And those adjusted assists, those are like as good as gold when you're looking at handicapping these markets, because those just tell you when he's setting teammates up for shots they should be making. And if you have a little bit better luck, you're talking about a guy that could be averaging closer to 7 assists per game over the last 12 games. And I know that I've been, you know, riding Kevin Porter Jr. a lot lately, but if you look at the usage rate between these two without Giannis Antetokounmpo, it's about even at like 25%. They are both getting a lot of opportunities to run offense. And I do think this is a matchup where I think that Rollins' speed is going to help him get to the rim and just put a lot of pressure on the Boston, you know, bigs to maybe overhelp or just other players to kind of step up and leave their guys. And I do think that Rollins has proven that he is a good enough passer. He reads the game well enough to set teammates up for quality looks, even against the Celtics defense that has been playing very well lately. And it does sound like Giannis's return is on the horizon, by the way. So I'm excited to see what that looks like, because obviously I've been a little bit higher on what this Milwaukee team has looked like without Giannis lately than maybe the consensus has been. Last night's loss, though, was absolutely terrible against the Bulls. And yesterday in general, forgettable one for me. I got absolutely killed. But yeah, they went from like up 20 to down 20 in like a snap of a finger. And man, that was a really bad one for them to let get away. But I do think this is a game that should be somewhat tight. I mean, both these teams are playing their third games in 4 nights, back to back for both teams. But it's Milwaukee that has the benefit of playing at home. Boston's had to travel a little bit more. I think this is a game where you should see the Bucks kind of hang around and at least give Rollins the opportunity to go over in the fourth quarter if that's what he needs to do. Otherwise, hopefully he can hit it in the third or something. But this is a game where we're probably going to need him to play his full minutes load, and keeping this game somewhat close is the only way he's going to play that amount of minutes. So hopefully this is a game that Milwaukee does not get blown out. Hopefully last night's loss is easy to put behind them. But I do think this is a game where he can have, you know, 6-7 assists. And he did have 7 assists against Boston when he faced them earlier in February, on February 1st to be exact. So I don't see any reason he can't hit it. And it is +132 odds. Absolutely love it at that number. Another game that I have a play on is the Clippers at the Warriors, 10 p.m. Eastern. And this is actually one that I'm playing Los Angeles on the money line at -115 to win 2 units. So it is a big play for me. And this is one that I put in last night as I was watching the Clippers, you know, blow the doors off the Pelicans. I was kind of watching that game a little bit nervous about whether or not Kawhi Leonard would play the second leg of a back-to-back. And we still don't know for sure that he will, but he only had to play 29 minutes last night. They were very stress-free minutes. I don't think that his body's going to be hurting him too much. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's out there this evening. But even if he's not, it does sound like Darius Garland returns for the Clippers. And I absolutely love Los Angeles's kind of like defense first players in the rotation, especially in this matchup against Golden State, because the Warriors have been absolutely terrible offensively. I mean, since the deadline, but, you know, even, you know, since like January 1st, this has just been a really bad offensive team. And Steph Curry is out tonight, joining Kristaps Porzingis, who continues to deal with illness. Obviously, Jimmy Butler out for the season. And, you know, one number that, you know, it really tells you the whole story of this Golden State team this year. When Steph is on the floor for Golden State, they're scoring 119.4 points per 100 possessions. That's in the 82nd percentile in the league. So a good offensive team when they have Curry. When Curry's off the floor, only 112.5 points per 100 in the 30th percentile in the league. So they go from being a very good to a very bad team when Curry is off on offense. And while they are good defensively, there are certain players that you just can't game plan for. And I think that if Kawhi's out there, he's going to absolutely torch them. Like, he's just been an absolute killer lately. And what he's been doing for this Clippers team is just insane. Like, I've talked about this a little bit on the podcast. I've talked about it on some of my show appearances over on the VSiN network. But, like, man, it's pretty hard to argue that anybody has been actually better than Kawhi, you know, since the start of the new year. Like, I think that we've seen now two full months of Kawhi being the best player on the planet. And I just kind of think that if he's out there tonight, there's just going to be nothing the Warriors can do. And, you know, since the trade deadline, you're talking about a Clippers team that has a positive net rating, plus 2.6, Warriors down at minus 2.8, and Los Angeles this season, 7-4 straight up when playing as a road favorite. Golden State, 2-4 straight up as home underdogs. I just think this is a game that the Clippers should win. I think that if last night's game ended up being, you know, somewhat tough and a game they had to grind out, I maybe would have, you know, been a little bit more hesitant. But I just don't think this Golden State team's good right now. I think the vibes are really bad, for whatever that's worth. I mean, Curry is dealing with an injury that right now, like, it really sounds like if they were playing a little bit better and he was maybe a little bit happier, he'd be more willing to come back. But I think that they've just given him no reason to rush through an injury because of how bad they've been. And now you got Kuminga balling out in Atlanta. And that's, you know, just the ultimate betrayal in a way, and just something that's not looking good for Steve Kerr. So it's just a bad time in Golden State. And this Warriors team is hard to trust against good competition. I know that they had one game where they, like, absolutely pummeled the Nuggets in a game where Denver was expected to win. But I don't think you're going to see too many of those performances, and I don't think you're going to see it against the Clippers because, like I've said, Los Angeles, this team is really good defensively. You got Chris Dunn, you got Derek Jones Jr., you got some of these defensive specialists out there that could go and, like, shut the water off for a player like D'Anthony Melton or Brandon Pajemski, like these players that have been playing well for the Warriors and, you know, keeping this team kind of afloat. I don't really see it happening against this Clippers group. I think they're a little bit too good defensively. And I'm really been impressed with what we've seen from the center position for Los Angeles, because this team obviously moved Zubac to Indiana, and they were hoping that, you know, Brook Lopez and Niederhauser would be able to kind of hold down the fort at the center spot. And they have. I mean, Lopez has been able to space the floor, still a really solid rim presence. Niederhauser, just a really good energy big. Also, you know, decent free throw shooter from what I've seen. Somebody that if you're hacking him and you're trying to put him on the line, you can't do it. Just it's been a really, you know, strong, honestly, couple of months for the Clippers. And then they, you know, maybe halted their momentum a bit in moving James Harden to the Cavaliers, but they have kept it up and looked solid since all of those moves. And I just think that's going to continue the rest of the season. I think this is a good group, a good defensive team, and Ty Lue definitely has them, you know, competing on a nightly basis. So this is a game that I expect the Clippers to win. I went bigger on it than I usually do. I'll feel fine if they lose. It would be a bummer, but, like, I feel like the thought process here is strong enough that I'm okay with going bigger on it. So I have those two plays right now. I'm passing on Rockets, Wizards, and Nuggets, Jazz at the moment, but I will say I've been keeping an eye on Reed Shepard's first quarter point total in that Rockets, Wizards game. It's 5.5 right now. You can get plus money on the over. I want to see if I can find a 4.5, even if it's juiced at some point today, just because Shepard has been starting. Wizards, one of the worst defensive teams in the league, guarding the three ball, guarding at the rim, everything. And Shepard, I just think, is the type of player that could exploit, you know, a terrible matchup like this, or, you know, a great matchup for a scorer, but an awful defense is what I mean. So I think that Shepard's going to knock down a couple shots early, and I would just like to win if, you know, he makes a layup and a three. I don't want to rely on 6 points, so I'm going to see where that stands a little bit later on, but I might end up going to it at 5.5 if I have to, just because Shepard, I mean, three of the last four games, he's had 6-plus points in the first quarter. I do think this is a guy that's been playing really well all season. And like I said, like this type of matchup where you're talking about a defense that is 28th in the league defending at the rim, 22nd in the league defending spot-up jumpers, and 27th defending catch-and-shoot opportunities. This is just a perfect matchup for Shepherd. So I'd be surprised if he doesn't have a pretty successful game. The reason I'm not going to his point total over the course of the entire game is like something that I've talked about quite a bit on this podcast. Is I think when you're facing these tanking teams and you're like a 20-point favorite, there's a really good chance that the player you're betting on will not be playing late in the third or the entire fourth quarter. So I just think that it's tough to take player props in these games that are expected to be lopsided. But right now I have those two other plays, might add another, but we still have plenty to talk about. If you're looking to sharpen your edge this NBA season, VSiN Pro is where to start. Get advanced analytics, player prop projections, and expert insights used by serious bettors every day. Try it out for only $9.99 for your first month and see what smart bettors are using to beat the books. Head to vsin.com/subscribe and check out all the subscription options. I've talked about this a ton, but like I really think the $9.99 offer is a great way to get involved at like a very busy portion of the sports calendar. I start writing up some of my NCAA conference tournament previews today. My managing editor, Adam Burke, already has a few of those up on the website. So, you know, March Madness right around the corner, you're getting a ton of our college basketball content and everything I'm doing for the NBA. Also, Indian Wells for all of you tennis lovers out there. I don't know how many of my basketball listeners are tennis fans, but I do a ton of Indian Wells stuff over at the website. So yeah, it's just a lot going on in addition to our MLB preview content. So would definitely strongly suggest jumping on that offer or taking a look at, you know, some of the long-term offers because we're offering deals on those too. But it is a great time to be a VSiN Pro. All right. Well, I mentioned that we have a lot to talk about and the stuff that I wanted to get into, it's kind of some recap of yesterday, but then also a little bit of stuff looking ahead to the rest of the season, kind of looking at some of the stuff that have really, you know, jumped out to me over the last 6 weeks. Like I've been going back to, like I've said, kind of smaller sample sizes to see if there are any teams that are standing out and might be worth a futures market play. That's kind of the way that I found, you know, the Pacers last year to win the East, which ended up paying off. And the Timberwolves to make, you know, to win the West, which didn't win, but got really close. They got all the way to the Western Conference Finals. I'm hoping to find a strike, lightning twice there and see if there's something that stands out and maybe we could hit on a long-term play. As of right now, it's not the case, but there is stuff that jumps off the page. So let's talk a little bit about that. But we'll start with Sunday. Yesterday, I think that the place to start is the Knicks earned a really big win over the Spurs, snapping an 11-game winning streak for San Antonio in a game where the Knicks turned San Antonio over 22 times. And I just thought it was a really big performance for the Knicks, just in terms of like mentality and everything. I think, you know, it was a game where Jalen Brunson didn't have the biggest game in the world, but he had 24 points, 7 assists. He hit a lot of big shots in the first half when San Antonio looked like it was kind of running away with the game. Brunson brought the Knicks back, made it close, and then eventually the Knicks, you know, flipped a switch and were winning the game big, and it ended up being a blowout. But it was a game where Brunson kind of did everything he needed to do. Mikal Bridges had a huge game for the Knicks, 25 points on 10 for 17 shooting from the floor, 5 for 9 shooting from three. And just overall, when Bridges is shooting well, New York is a completely different team. I think that he's a player that is a major swing player for them looking ahead to the postseason. I think that's not, you know, a hot take or anything. They gave up a billion first round picks to acquire Bridges. He's been a little bit disappointing since arriving there in comparison to what, you know, they sent out for him. But yeah, when he's knocking down corner threes and just making defenses pay for packing the paint, it's, you know, a completely different version of this offense. And then Cat was not great offensively, but very good defensively, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later. I thought Mohamed Diawara played very well for the Knicks, 14 points, 4 rebounds in only 15 minutes, and actually set an NBA record for three-point attempts per minute in a single game. He shot 13 threes in his 15 minutes. He was not shy about firing away. He only made 4 of them, but 4 threes, pretty solid game. And like I said, like I think that he was one of the other guys that was spacing the floor well, played some solid defense, just overall really big win for the Knicks to show up like that defensively against, you know, an elite Spurs offense and kind of win a primetime game, or not primetime, but marquee game that was, you know, on national television. That's a big statement for New York. And New York's one of the teams that I actually want to talk about a little bit later. But man, like there's been times this year where it was pretty easy to hate on the Knicks. And I want to say it was like as recently as like 9 days ago or something that I was talking to Kelly Bilblin about them, and we were really down on what they were doing. But all of a sudden, it's a solid looking team, and they're right in the picture, right in the mix in the Eastern Conference. So it's going to be anybody's game kind of once we get into that postseason amongst the teams at the top four, with one of the other ones being the Cavaliers, who, you know, beat the Nets yesterday in a game that wasn't, you know, fun to watch or anything. And it was not an impressive performance for Cleveland by any means. It was a very close game, but it was noteworthy because James Harden played. He returned from that broken thumb, played with something on it, and I thought he played well. He had 22 points, 9 rebounds, 8 assists, 5 for 9 from the field, 4 for 7 from 3, and 8 for 12 from the free throw line. I think that overall, like, everything looked fine with his jumper, and overall confidence-wise, he looked just fine going to the basket, willing to absorb contact, all of that. So I think that any concerns about what that thumb injury might mean for them as like a contender moving forward were kind of quieted. I mean, I am a little bit nervous about like what would happen if someone really makes, you know, good clean contact on that thumb. Like, would that force him out of action? But it does seem like the splint or whatever he's wearing is going to protect him. And it sounds like an injury that's going to heal even while he's playing through it at some point over the rest of the regular season. So I just don't think there's a lot, you know, to worry about there. And this is a team that, I've said it before, like, I think that Cleveland is the best team in the Eastern Conference when Harden and Mitchell are out there. Mitchell just missed his third straight game, so dealing with an injury right now. But this team is crazy deep at the guard position. They can afford to be without one of these guys every single night the rest of the season. But what you want is Harden and Mitchell to get a lot of time together to build chemistry for the postseason. But man, like, the depth of this team is just insane right now. And it's not even factoring in Max Strus coming back, who it seems like that could be any day now. So it's a team that I think is going to go 8-9 deep in the postseason with guys you could really trust in a playoff series. And something that's actually surprised me is that Dennis Schroeder has seemingly gotten the first crack at, you know, the backup guard minutes over Keon Ellis, who I thought was going to be the prize of that trade. But either way, Schroeder and Ellis are both playing well. I just really like the backcourt depth. I like the wings that they have. I know that it's not like the most inspiring thing in the world to like a casual fan, but like, Jalen Tyson is a good small forward. Dean Wade is a good forward. I just really like this team right now, especially with the bigs getting to play off of both Harden and Mitchell. Those guys are so much more dangerous offensively when they are, you know, just kind of being spoon-fed by Harden and Mitchell. So like, overall, this team offensively and defensively looks great to me. And I just think that the Cavaliers are going to be the team to beat. It's just a matter of like getting guys healthy, getting them some time to play with one another. But yeah, I think that Harden playing well yesterday was something that needed to be mentioned, and something that I do think that was kind of impactful when looking at the rest of the season. Another game, and probably the last game we should talk about from yesterday, that I do think was definitely like, you know, kind of a statement. Timberwolves go into Denver and beat the Nuggets. It was still another game for Denver where Peyton Watson and Aaron Gordon were out. So this Nuggets team still not healthy. But it was the type of win that kind of like validates my belief in Minnesota as a Western Conference contender and NBA title contender for that matter. I just think that this team doesn't care when they play bad teams. And I know that that's not a really good like way of going about your business when you're not even like a top four seed in the West. Like, you need to win your games and try to get into that top six and like just solidify yourself as a team that doesn't have to play in the play-in tournament. Like, it's crazy that a team that, you know, isn't coming off a title run kind of has that like championship hangover. But I do think that there's something about this team that's like, oh, we've made the Western Conference Finals 2 years in a row. How could we get up for a game against the Bulls? And I think you like, you see it with the bad losses with this team, but you also see the other gear that they have in like wins over the Thunder, a win like this, that this team does have it in them to just kind of flip the switch, play elite defense, and then play some solid offense. And I think the offense was what was kind of impressive last night. It was not a game where like they were facing a really good defensive team or anything, but I thought that, you know, Denver was doubling Ant and being very, very aggressive and just kind of blitzing him and forcing him to make decisions. And pretty much every single time, Edwards made the right read, got the ball out quickly, and trusted in his team to play 4-on-3, which he said after the game, like, I trust my 4 more than the other team's 3. I'll make that decision every single time. And he didn't just talk it, he walked it. And I do think that it was a game where like Timberwolves overall as a team were crazy efficient. Edwards had 6 assists to 2 turnovers. That was a good, you know, stat line for him as a playmaker. overall, I really like the way that this team looks right now. I like that they play like an 8-man rotation already, that Chris Finch is already like in postseason mode. Bones Highland, by the way, played a great game for them yesterday. And I think that the pairing of him and Dosunmu off the bench looks awesome. Dosunmu has been great ever since arriving in Minnesota. What a great pickup for them. But overall, yeah, I mean, I'm just like fully feeling good about being a Timberwolves believer and a Timberwolves backer in the Western Conference, because it's not quite the Eastern Conference. I think there are four teams in the East that can win the East and like represent that conference in the NBA title, in the NBA finals. And like, there's not much that separates those teams. It's not quite like that in the Western Conference. I think that like the Spurs and Nuggets fall a little bit below the Thunder, and then maybe the Wolves fall a little bit below the Spurs and the Nuggets. But I do have four teams in the West that can win the West. Timberwolves, one of them. And they would have to play a great series, obviously, to knock off one of the teams ahead of them. But I don't see any reason they can't do it. And I think that this team is just being slept on a little bit, like just kind of using what we've seen from them already. Like, this is a proven playoff team that has just done, you know, fantastic work in the postseason. And they got better from last year. I know that, like, it took a while for them to get there because they let Nikhil Alexander-Walker go to Atlanta, didn't really replace him. The stuff with the young guys didn't work out very well. I mean, Terrence Shannon Jr. is now getting DNPs. Rob Dillingham shipped off for Dosunmu. But now that they have Dosunmu, they have the same depth that they had last season. Edwards is better. Other guys are better. I just think this is a better team than we saw a year ago. And that was a team that, like I said, made the Western Conference Finals. I think that they can get to the NBA Finals. I really do. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the stuff that I just said before, like some of the sample size stuff that I like to do. So I've sorted at Cleaning the Glass back to January 15th. So from January 15th to today, what have I learned? What teams are standing out to me and looking, you know, better than I think that people really realize? I'll start with the Spurs. There was a bad loss yesterday against the Knicks. There's no denying that, but 11 game winning streak heading into that one. And since January 15th, this team is 16-4 with a league best net rating of a plus 11.9. So outscoring opponents by 11.9 points per 100 possessions since January 15th, 16-4. They're number two in the league in points per 100. They're also number four in the league in points allowed per 100. I just think that like there's some skepticism about whether or not San Antonio can go out and compete this year and actually win a title this year, because they are a little bit young. And there's not really an example recently of like a young team just going right to the NBA Finals and winning it. We've seen teams get there and come very close and not get the job done. Like the Celtics are a recent example. The Thunder with like KD, Durant, Westbrook and Harden. Like there are examples of it, but this team feels a little bit different just because Wemby is like such a freak that he completely changes the way like opponents play the game. I mean, even yesterday in a loss, like my big takeaway still would be that like for the entire first half, the Knicks were genuinely petrified of driving to the basket. You saw guys going to the rim and just pulling it out, taking like ugly looking floaters when like Wemby wasn't even jumping to block shots. He's just such a presence down there that in a playoff series, he's going to be a lot for opponents to have to deal with. And I do think that the backcourt is good enough right now, even though it's young, to go out and win multiple series. And then if you do see Spurs Thunder in the Western Conference Finals, like San Antonio is going to have the confidence to go out and win that series. Like the Spurs have been dominant against the Thunder during the regular season. Why wouldn't they believe that they can do it on the next stage? I know that the Thunder, it's now a situation where they've been there, done that, but I don't really know. I'm still not like, I don't want to say that last year was fluky, but they did get very fortunate with Haliburton getting injured in the NBA Finals. And I just kind of wonder if like the championship pedigree that you normally see other teams win and just kind of like throw into like their skill set or arsenal, whatever you call it. Like, I'm not sure that they have that. I'm not sure that they're going to go out there with like the complete belief that in a close game in the playoffs that they're going to like just buzzsaw teams. I just don't know that I see it. So I think that there's going to be something with the Spurs team feeling like they could beat the Thunder. And if they play one another, man, like I hope that we get it, because like, give me 6-7 games of that. I would love to see it. But I do think that San Antonio, like everyone knows they're good. I just don't know that people know that like for the better part of like 2 months now, they've been the best team in the entire NBA. So I think that that was worth monitoring, worth mentioning. Another team that stood out when looking at stuff, the Celtics, 16-5 with a net rating of plus 11.2. So right behind the Spurs when kind of looking at record and net rating since January 15th. And you could take that a step further too and say, this team's number two in the NBA in points allowed per 100 possessions at 108. And that's very significant because the Celtics, pretty much the entire season, have been the number two offense in the league behind the Nuggets, no matter where you're looking, like everywhere. And Boston has been special offensively, even without Jason Tatum. But like Bill Simmons said that he expects Jason Tatum back on Friday. I don't know if Simmons was just saying that, like guessing, or if like he's heard things, but it sounds like Tatum's going to be back any second now. And if this team is like a top five defensive team without him right now, I'm not sure you can still say that they are, but for a pretty good, you know, 6 weeks, they have been. Tatum's only going to make them better on that end of the floor, even when he's coming back from an Achilles injury, because his size is good. His, you know, defensive awareness is good. His positioning is good. I just don't think you're getting worse defensively if you're like swapping out Baylor Shireman for Jason Tatum. So I mean, this team is now just like great on both ends of the floor. And that's why, like I said before, any of those four teams in the East can win. And, you know, this Celtics team, they definitely can do it. Like, I think that maybe I'm a little bit more worried than others about their center position still. Like, Cade has been great this season, but like, let's see what he does in the postseason when, I don't know, I think his foul trouble might be an issue. Like, he is somebody that can be a little over-aggressive as a defender, and Vooch has looked borderline washed with Boston. Like, definitely a backup center at this stage in his career. Maybe he can play in the playoffs, maybe he can't, but like, in the right matchup, I could see teams really hunting him and doing damage, getting him into action. So I think that's where I kind of worry about this Boston team, and that's kind of a product of like, the Celtics not believing that this year would be a year where they'd contend. This year they wanted to just be solid, you know, keep things kind of afloat. And it was a gap year in the way that this was supposed to be a gap year for the Pacers. But then they just kind of exceeded expectations and played way better than anybody thought. Now all of a sudden they're in a situation where like Tatum's coming back and there's championship expectations. I just don't know if the roster is there yet. I mean, they need to make the move that like the Pacers made and go out and really get a really good center. Maybe Kata kind of proves me wrong and has a great postseason and he ends up being that guy. But I think that this team is like a piece or two short right now, but we'll see. But I did think it was worth mentioning that like, this is a number two offense in the league. And for a really, you know, lengthy time now, they've been the number two defense in the league right now. So they have a really strong kind of like statistical profile and like championship resume, honestly, because even when you look at something like Phil Jackson's like 40 wins before 20 losses rule, which says that like, you know, NBA champions need to win 40 games before they lose 20. They were really close too. They ended up losing, I think they were 38-20. Now they're 40-20. So they were really close to satisfying that requirement. Only three teams in the league actually satisfied that, by the way. But Boston came really close. They are a top five team when you look at both offense and defense over the last 6 weeks. And, you know, for, you know, a good portion of this season, they've looked just elite on both ends of the floor. That is something that, like, I think, you know, people need to take notice of right now because Tatum's only going to add to everything. All right, let's talk about the Hornets now because they're another team that just, like, continues to pop up when you look at these numbers. So since January 15th, I've talked about the juggernauts like and, like, some of, like, the actual big brands in this league now, in the Spurs and the Celtics. But the Hornets are right there with them, 16-5 with a net rating of plus 10.8. They're number one in the NBA in points per 100 possessions, number six in points allowed per 100 possessions. They have just been fantastic. And like, I know we've talked about them a ton on this podcast because I think that, you know, JVT, Kelly, you know, when they come on the show, we all want to talk about our win total bets, which I think, you know, Kelly actually won his over on 29.5 over the weekend. So good for him. But like, yeah, this Charlotte team, it's no longer just looking like they're a good story and like they're a team that's turning heads this season and, you know, somebody to keep an eye on for next season. They're a team that you just flat out do not want to play in the first round of the playoffs if they make the playoffs. And by the way, minus 125 for Charlotte to make the playoffs available right now. So look around, find prices on that. That's a play you absolutely have to make and toss a few units on. I know that this is a team that maybe will have to go through the play-in, But I don't know how you can't expect them to win the play-in or win their, you know, get in the through the play-in with the numbers that they have this year. I mean, this team has just been like unbeatable ever since they've, you know, gone to this starting five of LaMelo Ball, Konkanipel, Brandon Miller, Miles Bridges, Musa Diabate. Like, they've just flat out lost two games total, and they've been spectacular on both ends of the floor. And offensively, nobody can guard them. Defensively, they're just good enough with Diabate doing a lot of work for them on that end of the floor. But man, like I said, like, this isn't just a story anymore, like a fun story. This is like a team that could absolutely upset somebody in the first round of the playoffs. There's no reason they can't. If you look at their kind of, you know, statistical profile, like against even like the Pistons, the number one team in the Eastern Conference, they stack up very, very well. Like, you just have to throw out the first portion of the season with this team because it just was a different team. Like, Charlotte was banged up. They were young. They were getting to know one another. They didn't know who they were yet as a team. Now, like, you have to use the sample that we've looked at lately because that's what this team is now. And man, like, they're going to be a really interesting bet if they make the playoffs and they face someone in the opening round that is expected to go to the NBA Finals. It's not going to be easy. Like, they're going to probably go at least six or seven. You know, not at least seven, at least six. I really think that. I think that the Hornets are pushing some very good team in the first round and potentially beating them. They've been that good. All right, let's wrap this up with the Knicks because I said before I wanted to talk about their defense. Cat's been awesome defensively lately. He was great on Victor Wembanyama yesterday. And the reason I want to talk about the Knicks and the defense is because since January 15th, New York is number three in the NBA in points allowed per 100 possessions. There were times in these last 4 weeks where, like, it looked like the sky was falling with the Knicks. And in this span where they're 14-7, by the way, there was like a players only meeting and people were just completely writing off New York as an Eastern Conference contender. I would not be so quick to do that. This team has figured things out defensively. They have the pieces that they need to, like, offensively. Like, I think that worst case scenario, I've talked about this, like, I talked about it when they hired Mike Brown. Like, worst case scenario, if things still, like, don't look absolutely great and the way that you were hoping offensively when you hire Brown, like you know, just making Cat comfortable, finding ways to empower OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges off the ball. If all of that stuff, like, is still stalling out and failing at the end of the regular season, there's no reason you can't just jump back into Jalen Brunson hero ball, something that you know works in the postseason, and just go back to being kind of like a Tibbsy team. Like, that was why I thought that hiring Brown made sense, because, like, there was a world where he came in and he made the offense absolutely incredible, and the offense has looked really good throughout, you know, the course of the season, but there's been moments where it's been shaky and there's been moments where guys have been unhappy, especially Cat. But, like, the downside, like, just wasn't there for me. It's like they know that a very simple offense of, like, rolling the ball out to Brunson is going to work. So why not try a bunch of different things, you know, just kind of see if you can hit, you know, strike gold with a coach in Brown who's built some, like, very strong offenses throughout his career. I just thought that the upside was there. There wasn't a lot of downside. And I think we're going to see that eventually, that, like, if this stuff isn't working, which it kind of has been, like, whatever. They'll just roll out the ball to Brunson and say, go win us a playoff series. He can do it. But, like, I just think it's been very encouraging for the Knicks, like, backers and fans, that the defense has really, really stepped up, and Towns especially has responded very well to all of the criticism. And it's going to be big that he continues to do that in the playoffs, because the weakness for this team, like everybody knows, is, like, that Brunson and Cat will probably be on the floor a ton together in the playoffs. And this team might not be good enough to defend with those two guys out there. But if Cat is holding his own against opposing bigs and just not being a complete sieve on the defensive end, like, this team could beat anyone. And that's why, you know, all year I've just said four teams can win the East. The Knicks can absolutely win the East, especially just considering how tough it is to beat them at Madison Square Garden. I just think, like, this has been a very good stretch from them. And yesterday's win, it just stamped them as, like, an absolute contender in the Eastern Conference. Like, I still think the Cavaliers are the best team, but I've talked about, like, the Celtics and the Knicks being right there with the Pistons. I actually think the Pistons are the fourth best team in the Eastern Conference, at least the way that I see it going in the playoffs. But yeah, I just think that like we need to throw some, you know, throw some water on the fire that was in New York, because things have looked good when you actually look at their stats. You zoom out, take a breath, and see that this team has been a lot better ever since they've really kind of taken a look in the mirror and tried to figure things out. Before we recap our best bets for tonight, attention to any listeners who are new to VSiN. Signing up for our free daily newsletter is a great way to catch up. Delivered straight to your inbox every morning, VSiN's newsletter offers picks, data, and strategies for the day's betting menu. Sign up for free now at vsin.com/newsletter and start receiving your free newsletter tomorrow morning. That's vsin.com/newsletter. Stay ahead of the game and bet smarter with VSiN. All right, well, we talked about a lot today, and I only have two picks for this evening, so let's just kind of get them out there. I have Ryan Rollins over 5.5 assists at +132 in tonight's Bucks-Celtics game. And then I have the Clippers money line -115 to win 2 units versus the Warriors. I had a really bad Sunday, so I could use these 2 wins to kind of get me right back in the green and feeling a little bit better as we head into this week. But yeah, I do feel really good, at least about that Clippers play. I mean, it could lose. Nothing's a sure thing. But like, man, it's just a really tough time to feel like you could back Golden State against any strong team. It isn't quite the Lakers level of like fade them when they face anyone good and play them when they face anyone bad. But I do think it's kind of similar to that. I think Golden State can be trusted to beat bad teams, can't be trusted to beat above average and better. And I think the Clippers are absolutely above average and better. So I think the Clippers win tonight. I'm willing to risk a little bit more on it than I normally do. Don't have a lot of 2-unit plays for this year. I usually do, but this is one of them. So hopefully we get these 2 plays. I'll think about adding Shepard. And if I do, you'll see it on the Pro Picks page. You'll see it at the bottom of my column for tonight. But man, it's going to be a slow night tonight, but the rest of the week should be awesome for hoops. And hopefully you join me throughout the week with the a Tuesday episode of Harvard Handicappers, where hopefully we'll have Kelly Bidlin on. But all week we'll be doing these shows and we'll have a lot to talk about. We are entering kind of the business end of the NBA season. I know that March Madness is going to be a big talking point for basketball fans, but this end of the regular season in the NBA is going to be awesome as well. So hopefully, you know, you like, subscribe, everything to this show, and be a part of what we're doing the rest of the season.